This is tape one, side two, interviewing Jane Dickman, Marcy Schwartz, and Jane Gershon. And we're continuing with our interview. You were talking about the youngsters that you prevented, hopefully prevented from getting into trouble.
Yeah.
Did you have any stories to tell about any of them that you followed or knew more about later?
We did have a follow-up party, and I know one of the boys went on to work with, is it Brother's Brother?
Mm-hmm.
It's not a charitable thing. It's a helping kind of an organization.
Yeah.
And I thought that was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was another gal, I can't remember her name, but I think she moved to California. They all came from South Oakland,
mm-hmm.
around there.
Mm-hmm.
And then she did come back to the city for a while, and I did get to see her. And I think she had come back when we were, she got a scholarship, a Gulf Oil scholarship. She was very good in chemistry and math.
Mm.
And so whatever she was doing in California was related to chemistry and math. And that was kind of nice, too.
Yeah. Do you remember her problem before she...
She didn't really have a problem.
She was
a good kid.
She wasn't a hardcore.
No. I don't think any of them were.
Yeah.
They might have ended up in trouble. Probably, from truancy and...
Drugs?
Probably.
Yeah.
And I still don't know whether we prevented that or whether they were able to keep it in check, and we never knew.
Okay.
But and then a couple of them went into service too. That seemed to be I don't want to say a dumping ground, but maybe it was for kids who really didn't know what they wanted and were kind of at loose ends.
Yeah.
Yeah. A couple of the boys did go into the service.
Did you in any way work with their families, or this was strictly with the kids?
It was strictly with the kids. There was no problem. We could have met with the families if they wanted to.
Yeah.
Some of the volunteers might have.
How did they get referred to you? How did you find these kids?
Well, this was at this South Oakland Community Center.
Ah.
Where Phil Pappas was the director.
Okay.
And then we also had two young men who worked with these kids in social. I don't know what they did with them, to tell you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
But they were staff there.
Mm-hmm.
And one was Terrence McElligott. McElligott. And the other was Jerry, and I can't remember his last name. Jerry was an African American, and he was a very colorful character. He dressed colorfully, literally. And I forget his hairdo, but it was quite unusual. But he was a dear. He really was.
When they had the big
frog. Yeah. I don't think he did. As a matter of fact, I think he was bald.
Oh. I thought that was...
No, he did not have the big afro.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And he and Terry was white, and they were so opposite, and they worked very well together.
Mm-hmm. That sounds very interesting.
Yeah, so they were always present, either one or both,
mm-hmm.
usually both. And we'd have discussions, and they would help us lead the discussion.
That sounds very worthwhile.
Yeah, we did enjoy it.
Uh-huh.
And then while this program was going on, there was another one called Friends Indeed, and that was for girls. No, I'm wrong. It was not for girls. It was for both. And I think this program, it also had to do with juvenile justice. I remember the two executive directors.
Who were they?
Gene Mitchell and Ann.
Okay, and somebody or other.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I know that a lot of these kids were on, they really had just come out of detention, I believe. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And now I was not involved with that until later. And all these programs seem to have gone on. I know that one went on, I think, for a good 10 years.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
How did you become involved, and what was your involvement?
In which?
In both. Friends Indeed and...
Yeah, I was a volunteer in... Just a volunteer. I think I might have been a chair or co-chair at one time. I really am not sure. And I don't think I was a chair of Friends Indeed, but I believe Lifestyle must have ended and this one was still going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of switched over. I don't know. I really don't remember anymore. But they would have parties for the volunteers and the kids every year,
mm-hmm.
usually at Anathan House.
Mm-hmm.
And Nancy Guskey was active. She was from Mount Lebanon. She was also a former president of the South Hills branch.
Of council.
Uh-huh.
But see, the name Guskey makes me think of
The orphanage.
I don't know.
She herself certainly wasn't, and whether her husband was related or not, I don't know.
Okay.
But they're still in Mount Lebanon. He was an attorney.
Yeah.
I don't know whether he was involved. I think Ruth Lieber was, I don't know if she was part of that or not. Marlene House was, and I don't know. God, what's so long ago?
Yes, it was.
40 years ago.
Seems like yesterday.
Not exactly.
From 1968 to 69, you were the chair of the oral history program. Tell me how you got involved with that and what your role was.
Well, I was chair, and that was when Marcia was vice president under Frieda Shapira.
Vice president of?
Community services.
Okay.
And she asked me if I would chair it, and it sounded very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, sure. And I think Edith Goodman, who had been... she was Nate Goodman's wife,
mm-hmm.
and also a friend of mine. Nate Goodman had been the executive director of JF&CS.
Mm-hmm.
And she and I were the co-chairs of this program. And that was quite an undertaking. We needed to find respondents. We needed to find interviewers. And we had a whole committee who was going to do the questionnaire guide and the methodology. And this was when Dr. Elon Sheila was teaching us how to do interviews. And unbeknownst to me, Marcia told me later that he did it all wrong. And he should have done this and so instead of whatever he was telling us.
I took his course. I was
there. Oh, you were there, of course, Jean.
Uh-huh.
And there was a lot of communication between the interviewers and the interviewees, mm-hmm. The respondents. But at that time, it was a one-on-one. We didn't have two mm-hmm. and two people going
right.
to a respondent.
Yeah. Who came up with this idea?
Actually, it was Saul Weisberg.
Uh-huh.
And he was the associate director of, the assistant executive director of UJF.
Assistant executive
director of UJF. And it was at a time when Riverview was being built. And Riverview was for senior citizens. It was not assisted living or anything, much as it is today. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's exactly as it mm-hmm. as the Riverview Towers is mm-hmm. today. It's for seniors, and I guess they still had a one meal.
And there were little apartments.
And these were little apartments, right. Mm-hmm. So he was interviewing people for residency there, and evidently they were telling him their life stories, and he thought they were so interesting that the councilwomen would be doing a real mitzvah if they would have a project listening to these people, because many of them didn't have families, or if they did, the families weren't interested. Mm-hmm. And Frida, he was a very good friend of Frida Shapira's at the time. Frida thought it was a worthy idea, brought the idea to Marcia, and the rest is oral history. You know?
Okay. Were there a lot of problems that occurred? You said it was different then than it is now, the oral history program, the methodology.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me some of the problems and that you overcame. Obviously you overcame them because the program grew and grew and grew.
It did. It really did. I'm trying to think now why we had so many volunteers then and why we are having difficulty now, and I really don't know, except that it was a new concept, I guess.
Right.
And
you have any idea about how many volunteers were involved?
If we look in the book, we could find out, Jean. We listed them all in the volunteers. But just as an aside, the original project was for immigrants. And then a lot of people felt that they had made contributions too, and their story ought to be recorded.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it grew into oral history too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was at that time that the training got a lot more intense.
Mm-hmm.
And the product of the first oral history, The Immigrant Experience, of course, was by myself on the book. And one of the problems was that Sheila wanted his name on it.
Uh-huh.
Ida Sullivan was our research mm-hmm. assistant. And if her name was on it, it was in very small print, and she was very upset about that.
Mm-hmm.
And but we did have NCJW's name on it, too. And I understand we copyrighted it, too, so somebody was smart about that.
Yeah. Where did the funds come to publish it? Do you remember? Was that?
I don't think we had any grants. I think it was out of our budget.
Out of the council budget.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I believe you made a film at that time also.
We did. Yes, we presented to the Oral History Association in Jackson Hole, and Marcia was.
Would you repeat that? The Oral History
Association.
You mean that's a nationwide group?
Yes.
Okay.
Right, and it met at Jackson Hole.
Okay.
And through Marcia Furmerman's associations in the Oral History Association, and through people that she knew, I guess, word got out about our project, and we were asked to present it there. And as anyone who knows Marcia Furmerman, she likes to do things in a fun way, not a boring way. And so we thought about it, and we thought that we would do a slideshow. And we did, we got pictures from the library, and she and I wrote a script. It was Molly and Gertie or something,
Becky,
something like that.
Yeah.
And we took the experiences of a lot of the immigrants and kind of made a composite people. And we had the two of them talking to each other and reminiscing about the old days. And we did the slideshow. And these professors were quite impressed. They had not seen such a thing. Mm-hmm. They were used to dry, dull papers being read. Mm-hmm. So we remained in the association and got a lot of their literature and probably learned a lot too.
Well, the program still, I believe.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, as you know, we went to another oral history, made another presentation. I didn't go. It was Cindy Lieb and Angela, I think. Or was it just Cindy?
Cindy and Marcia, and I think
Gabby Dinman.
Gabby Dinman.
Yeah, it was in Philadelphia. Right. And we did a movie for that.
Yeah.
And that was called Bridges to the Future. Wasn't that what we
Bridges
made it for?
To History?
The first one was called Bridges to History. The first one, I don't know what we called it, the slideshow. But then we had the slides put into a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then there, did we have three things then?
No, just three. Well, the slides and the...
Slides were put into the movie,
right.
Yeah.
And that was Bridges,
Bridges to History, and then the second movie was Bridges to the Future.
I believe you and Marcia both narrated both movies?
No, I didn't narrate the second one. We both narrated the first one.
Right.
Marcia narrated the second one.
Okay. Well, you were a chair of the oral history program from 68 to 69, but you have been involved officially and unofficially ever since?
Well, I wouldn't say that. I come in and out. When Marcia has a great idea that I can't resist.
Right.
And the newest one with that is we're developing two curricula. And they're to be courses, two six-week courses for adults to take. And we have a graduate student, Leah Ackner, who was recommended to us by Alex Orbach from the University of Pittsburgh, Jewish Studies.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been terrific, if a little unreliable, but eventually she gets it done. And she's on our wavelength, too, as to what we wanted to get across. We also were working with Rabbi Schiff, whom I must admit was not terribly impressed with what we were trying to do. And while we hoped that he would teach it, and because he is so well thought of by everyone. He just draws everybody when they hear Rabbi Schiff is giving a course. But he really isn't for this, and I don't think this project is for him either.
Okay.
We also have Roz Rosenblatt working with us, who is a dreamboat. And she has been a religious school teacher herself, and she's terrific, and our ultimate hope is that she will teach the course.
Mm.
She doesn't know this.
Oh, yeah. She was, so, I believe, principal of Advanced Jewish Studies at Beth.
She was principal of Beth Shalom.
Beth Shalom, yeah.
Yes, at Beth Shalom,
yeah.
Right.
And
she's wonderful, and what she knows off the top of her head is certainly more than Rabbi Schiff knows, because he's from Australia.
Yeah.
And but she has the same idea. We want to present this material in in a fun way again. We are doing visuals and we're interspersing tapes in the courses of study. And we're using the actual voices of the people who have been instrumental in the history of Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm. You said that Leah Achner has been on the same wavelength.
When we first wanted to do this, we were only going to do one curriculum. And when Rabbi Schiff looked at it, he could only see doing the history of Jewish Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. And so we thought, okay, we'll do two. And Leah was agreeable with that, although that wasn't our original thrust. We are calling the second course Living Judaism, for want of a better title. And recently, Marcia and I just went to hear, and again, I don't know names, but we heard this speaker at the University of Pittsburgh, who just last week or 2 weeks ago, he was brought in from Bar Ilan, Israel, but he's an American. And I think he studied at the University of Chicago. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about the various Judaisms and how people have packages, you know, and they elect to choose from each, from Orthodoxy, from Conservatism, from Reform. I call it Judaism a la carte, where you pick and choose and you know, whatever makes you comfortable. Mm-hmm. And he had no value judgment to make. It seemed perfectly fine to him. And so I thoroughly enjoyed his speech.
Thank you.
I agreed with him. Yeah. And that's kind of what we're showing in this Living Judaism, that there are many ways to be Jewish and to express your Judaism. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be in the synagogue.
Very good.
So
that project is well underway.
Yeah, the first one is very much underway. It's, you know, we keep hoping it'll be completed any day now.
And when do you expect it'll be?
Well, that's the other thing. Marcia was asking Rabbi Schiff when they need to print their syllabus or whatever they have for the students. Mm-hmm. And he said that usually happens sometime after June or between June and July. Mm-hmm. And maybe we'll be ready to be included in it, or maybe we won't pilot it there. Maybe we'll pilot at Rode of Sholem or somewhere. And as I say, if we do, we would love for Roz to do it, but that's our secret. This won't be made public
yet. No, we'll leave it right here.
Yeah, that's our hidden agenda.
Yeah, well, that's quite an undertaking.
It is.
And I know there's been a lot of...
We've worked very hard on it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we've had a lot of people, you know, advising us. We've got an advisory from out of town, from in town, from you name it.
Yeah. How did the Richard Rao grant come about?
Actually,
does it have to do with this program, or is it just for oral history?
Actually, it came about through oral history.
Yeah.
Mary Harrison and Gabby Dinman were interviewing Richard Rao for his mother,
right.
Helen Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I guess he was talking about all the things he was endowing in his mother's name and in his father's name. And so Mary picked up on it and felt that he was right for giving.
Mm-hmm.
And Marcia called him, and they met, and they talked about the oral history, and he was, you know, favorably impressed. And and he gave us $50,000. So that was very nice. So then we wanted to acknowledge it and make, and we also thought this would be a good opportunity to showcase the Oral History Project, which needed some attention and new interviewers.
Yeah.
So we had this program at the PAA, and it was very well received, and it went really well.
It was a lovely program.
We had Barry Paris speak, and it so happens that there was some little connection between Barry Paris's father and the Rao family.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of put our hook on that, and we had him featured as well as Richard.
I believe there were about 200 people.
Close to 200 people there, yeah. And I was so hoping you were going to get more than 8 interviewers, but and I think you might have had a number of people not had other commitments,
yeah.
Or the day, you know, if the training day,
yeah.
Was a different day.
Yeah. Well, that happens always,
mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
People are volunteering, you have to fit in with it.
But at least this group took the course and stayed with it, didn't they? They didn't attrish.
No, not yet. Two of them that started left the program right away, but the rest seem very enthused, and they're very good people.
Good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's been an on and off
love affair
between you
and Marcia.
Twisting
arms,
etc., etc.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We'll go on to 1970, when you were a delegate to Women in Urban Crisis. Tell me something about that. What was it, and what was
Women in Urban Crisis? I don't remember why it was formed, but obviously, I'm trying to think, was that after the, when was Watts in California? Was that around that time when?
In the late 60s, maybe. Wasn't it 68?
I think so. Uh-huh. And I guess this was to ward off any kind of revolt here.
Mm-hmm.
And it was to help the blacks get services that they sorely needed. And out of that came Charlotte Arnold. I think that was her maiden name. I don't know. Everybody seems to know her by Charlotte Arnold. But she was the chair of Women in Urban Crisis. And from that program came the Women and Girl Offenders program, which she chaired.
I'm sorry, Women?
And Girl Offenders. And I don't know if that's what it's called now or not, but I think it might even still be going on.
Mm-hmm.
And the other program to come out of it was Call for Action, although that really didn't come out of Women in Urban Crisis. It was a project of theirs, but it came out of NCJW. And a number of sections in other cities did it as an NCJW project.
Mm-hmm.
We decided to give it to Women in Urban Crisis. And Ruth Poindexter, a black American, and I were the co-chairs. And we started it with just housing, where we were, I guess we were answering questions about, we're trying to intervene between tenant-landlord problems, and especially in public housing.
I see. Jean, this is so interesting, but we're coming to the end of the tape, and we haven't near gone through the things that we have to go through. So we will be back.
I don't know what you have to go through.
Oh, this has been wonderful. So thanks very much.